Welcome to the B-side. It is Tyler. It is Monday. It is October the 27th. And we are just 4 days away from what has become the second most profitable kind of festival celebration.
Holiday?
I wouldn't call it holiday because I'm working.
Right.
Well, I guess I'm not. It's my day off. But I'm preaching. So
I'm working.
Yeah. Halloween is just 4 days away, and
you got your Martin Luther costume already.
Yeah.
For Reformation Day.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually going for John Kruk for Reformation Day. He's a former baseball player. I played in the '80s, and it's a cheap way to use a costume on Tuesday night for Wednesday night for youth, for our '80s night. Anyway. We, if you were here on Sunday, Steve was preaching, and which is pretty normal that he would preach on a Sunday, given his job. But he was talking about life and death and resurrection, and how as Christians we kind of need to think about death or consider death. Is that a fair intro?
Yeah, I think in our drift series, a lot of the things we've talked about is drifting in our behavior. Where it's like we started out one way, we stopped another way, and we talked about repentance and things like that. Where it's like we start behaving one way, but then in time we drift from a good behavior into sort of a stagnant behavior. But this one we were looking at a thought pattern, a way we think and feel about something, and we can drift in the way we think about this topic of death, and so that our thinking around death is shaped more by the thinking of our culture than it is around the biblical theology of understanding what life and death and what's to come, how they work. So we wanted to realign our thoughts around this most important topic, and one that's like quite neglected. Like, we just don't talk about it in our culture.
This is one of the things I was thinking about, is that the irony is that we use analogies that, like, in our culture all the time that would be the most apt for how we should think about death. Yet we don't talk about death. Like, we don't like to think about it. It's uncomfortable. Even the way we talk about people dying, we don't like to say so-and-so died, right? We like to say they passed on, they're in a better place or whatever. But I think one of the analogies that I was kept running in my head was like this idea of like finish well. And so we talk about, like, you know, when we talk about transitioning from one church to another, if you're a staff, like, you know, I'm somebody who's, you are as well, who's moved on from one church to another, like, you want to finish well in your last place, and you think succession plan, you think preparing, right, or in any kind of line of work, or if you're moving and you sell your house, you clean it up and you, like, you fix it up, you get ready to kind of transition, and then it comes to death and we're like, we don't like to think about it.
I've said this before, years ago, I think, in messages, but like I've heard it said, the Victorian era, they were obsessed with death and they never talked about sex. Like, sex was entirely taboo.
Oh, right.
It just kind of went, it just something that happened that nobody ever mentioned, but death, they were like always talking about death and kind of morbid. And our culture is the reverse, where we're obsessive with sex. It's all we seem to talk about, and yet death is a topic we rarely broach, I mean, except in movies.
Right. But even in movies, it's not often that you'll see a depiction of someone dying. In the sense of, like, death is like gunshots, next scene, or like explosion, assumption. Like,
you know, that character has a name, so you know they won't die.
Right. Only
the unnamed bad guy.
Do you ever watch The Blacklist?
Sometimes
it's like it's slowly becoming one of my favorite TV shows. New episode tonight. Just a little plug there, NBC. You're welcome. Maybe we'll get some money for that. get some new mics. But it always, you know, puts these characters, whatever, just like every show, puts them into compromising situations. And anytime when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh my goodness, what's gonna happen? I was always like, James Spader is not going to die. Like, bad guys aren't going to win, but he's a bad guy. But, like, he's not going to win. He's the star of the show. Like they're not going to kill him and be like, well, we made it 19 episodes and whatever. Right? So, like, there's just this level of, like, we don't like to talk about it. But one of the things, there was a couple of things that came up And I thought it was interesting how kind of what we were talking about on Sunday correlates with kind of where we're moving, or at least gave me pause to think about it, and some other people. Someone that I was talking to on Sunday just made a comment about kind of what happened in Canada last Wednesday morning, where Nathan Cirillo was shot down, and the whole episode of Parliament Hill, and you saw in the subsequent days our country rise up in a sense and get vocal about honoring this man and mm-hmm. that his death wasn't in vain and mourning his loss. Right, this terribly sad event, no question. And then somebody just kind of mentioning the irony of like we're mourning this man and kind of outraged at how it could happen, and then almost a week later, 10 days later, mm-hmm. we're going to celebrate death, we're going to put tombstones in our yard, and we're going to make a mockery of it. How do we kind of reconcile those two?
Now, I've got a friend who just saw on Facebook, like, my neighbor's putting skulls on stakes in their front yard. I hate Halloween. And it's like, yeah, isn't it this irony of like one man is killed, two total,
yeah.
the shooter, but this...
Well, and the guy, the other military in Quebec as well, right?
So an innocent life is taken and people line the highway of heroes to salute and honor this man who was killed. And there's outrage and mourning and loss, rightfully so, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the appropriate response. And yet, then the mocking of death a week later. But I think that's, like we said in the message, I think that's a means by which we try to control it, get a sense of control. Like, I watched the movie, I went and saw the movie Fury.
Brad Pitt,
World War II tank movie. And I'm not recommending it for everyone. Like, it's rated R. I didn't realize it was rated R until after the movie. It's quite gruesome. And part of that, you go...
That's a good way to see movies that you seem are interesting. You don't look at what the movie is.
And you're like, oh my goodness, I should... Yeah.
In some ways, it like accurately would, past my knowledge, depict the horror and gruesome nature of war. It's also, I mean, there's a lot of swearing and there's a lot of guys getting killed in a pretty gruesome way.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not a movie for everyone, not necessarily a recommendation here. But, so you go to, we get entertained by an R-rated movie where there's like a lot of people getting killed.
Yeah.
And yet, okay, so I compare that event, and it was gruesome and a little bit stomach churning and entertaining and all those sorts of things. It's a war movie, so you're not totally like amusing, but amusing's not the right word, you know, it's not, but it's there. It's this work, this, you know, piece of art, that we pay money to see. And then meanwhile, I compare that to when I was in Ottawa in the summer, we went to the War Museum. Canadian War Museum, which is really well done and really powerful experience. So the movie about war is entertaining. You go to the War Museum, it is a pretty awful place. Because now you're dealing with real people actually being killed. It's a very, very well done museum. They have like one of Hitler's actual vehicles. And they have a piece of the Berlin Wall. Like it's, and you can touch and feel these things, like actual like tanks and stuff there that were actually used in the different wars and things like that. And you hear testimonials and like little video clips, and it really comes alive and is powerful and sobering, and you walk out of that place like pretty quiet, pretty feeling the weight and ugliness of war and the price it's been paid. It's not entertaining.
No.
So movie, we pay and it's entertaining to see and people get killed, but the real deal is like, whoa, I don't want to talk about that. Like, that's too much, right? So there's this interesting duality.
You wonder if how much of that is our ability to fictionalize mm-hmm. The events and see them as, so we get caught up in the story of a movie and the characters. Mm-hmm. But when we go to a place like that, I remember when Ray and I were in Boston a number of years ago, there's a Holocaust memorial there in downtown Boston, and you kind of wander through this mm-hmm. like little monument. It's a block maybe long, and it kind of just depicts some of the horrible things that happened in World War II to the Jewish people. And it's like, it's disgusting. Like you feel like a rawness in your gut.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not often that a movie can kind of pull that outrage. I remember, as a college student, going to see, We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson, and it's about the Vietnam War, with some buddies in Toronto. And like, I thought it's one of my favorite movies, because I think it brings back this emotion to it, where like you get drawn into the lives of these young men. And at the time, I would have been 19 or 20, mm-hmm. and the guys that I was with would have been about that age too. And we sat there at the end watching the credits, going like, I can't believe what these young guys had to go through depicting it. But sometimes it's like most movies, doesn't leave you there, right? Like mm-hmm. you get caught into the story and the character and the whatever, and you don't often get caught into the realness of what people are going through. And I think Wednesday with what happened in Ottawa was an example of like, it's not funny when it happens in a video game, right? Like when you
run up and this is real.
This is real, and somebody lost their life. Two men lost their lives. And it's terrifying. And I mean, the worst part for me is like, I hate how the media tries to take these events. So I was watching the feed in the morning at home, and then I came to work and had it on the internet on my computer at home, at work here, and just watching some of the commentary and going like, you know, we immediately want to declare these events as, you know, not more significant, but because they're incredibly significant as they happen, but just the sense of trying to memorialize the moment as the moment's unfolding is kind of how I thought. Like I heard of one guy say, oh, this is Canada's 9/11. And I went, oh, that's incredibly insensitive. you know, some of these things, but we kind of like to esteem things. We're a weirdly ironic people because we like to esteem things on one hand, but on the same hand, not talking about it. We esteem death and violence when it's war. So like you think about the
movies,
the story of Sergeant at Arms, Kevin Vickers, and his kind of heroic action and taking this guy down.
Yeah,
we're like celebrating that. I listened to something CBC. Yeah, I must have listened to the description of how it happened. Was that today that they posted it?
No, a few days ago.
But I just saw it for the first time today, and I was like, wow.
It was like Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah,
like Kiefer Sutherland's going to play him in the made for CBC movie.
Yeah.
About
that's a
good
this. Point.
It's but good like you went Jack Bauer on him.
And I was just doing like simple math of going like this guy's body would have been riddled with 30 or 40 bullets or more, like just the way it was described. And I'm going like, and people are just like, unreal. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going, on one hand, I'm like, that's awesome. Like we took this guy down. And on the other hand, I'm like,
still a life was lost.
Yeah, and so it's trying to strike that balance.
We still mourn that loss too.
Yeah,
he's a real person.
Yeah,
he was very troubled.
Made some very poor choices, but yeah, it's.
So we have to honor the image of God, even in someone who's done things like that, right?
So
yeah,
one of the things you talked about on Sunday in the sermon was this. Kind of our culture or our kind of human way of dealing with death and what we do in death. And that you talked about, we're buried 6 feet under, facing the sun, all these cultural things. I'd never heard of or thought about, like, right? Like the
Christian.
In a row. Neatly in a row.
Yeah.
How do you say it? Neatly in a row, face up, facing the sun. Am I right? Some of those kind of things. So the funny thing is face east, yeah. So
because of this facing the sunrise, because Christ is going to come. The idea being that Christ would come from with the sun, so we'd rise up, we'd sit up in the graves to see Jesus.
Huh.
We don't bury face down; we bury face up, ready to sit up in the grave.
Right.
It's shaped by our theology, right?
Yeah. So
Christian burial.
And the cool thing was, we got some questions this week, and it was all the same question because. It was the first thing that crept into my head. First thing my wife asked me, and apparently you were asked as well, is, so if this is the kind of theology of resurrection for the Christian, I immediately was like, what about cremation? Mm. Like, so what happens to those guys and men and women that get cremated? Like, my dad wants to get cremated. He talks about it all the time. I want my ashes spread here. So my grandparents have been cremated. People I know, like, have been cremated. And I'm like, does that mean that they're out of luck at resurrection time? Like, how would you kind of counsel someone who's maybe wrestling with their loved one who's been cremated?
And I intentionally, like, left it out there. Like, I could have or should have talked about it, but I intentionally didn't.
Because you're a jerk.
Yeah, because I'm inconsiderate.
Or you just wanted everyone to tune
in. I wanted
to podcast.
Yeah. I didn't want everyone to think about it. Like, right. I think the challenge of the message is we need to think theologically about death and what it means and what is coming. And so I wanted us to leave thinking about that. I mean, okay, on one side of things, the question is, what if someone's been cremated? What happens at the resurrection? And I think the answer is God will figure it out. The God who raises people from the dead can figure it out. The same thing could be, what about someone who's burned to death in a fire, or is drowned in the sea, or is eaten by an alligator? Like, often our bodies don't make it. And actually, truthfully, when you bury someone, 1,000 years later, there's no body, right? Like, even then, the body decomposes, goes back into the ground, dust to dust. Right. So even then, with burial, there isn't always a body. So it's not like God is dependent on us burying correctly for the resurrection to happen. God will sort it out. He can rearrange the molecules. So in that sense, I don't think we have to be afraid of it, like, hurting the resurrection or something like that. If you've been cremated, eaten alive, burned, any sort of way that a body decomposes.
Like, this is getting incredibly morbid. This is side.
I just watched Fury.
How many other ways that you can be died and have your body disfigured?
Decapitated.
Yay.
So, God is sovereign over that. Even if you don't, you know, no matter how you die, God is going to, it's a miraculous thing, the resurrection. It's not depending on our burial method, it's dependent on God's power. So then
how should we think about creation?
So the question is, you know, on the one side, what does it mean for God? God is fine. Like, the resurrection is going to happen no matter what happens in the body. So then the question is, well, what should we do? Should we choose to cremate or bury? And I don't know. I think that, I mean, it's a symbol. There's purpose to the symbol. It's the symbolic nature of it isn't the only factor. Sometimes it maybe isn't possible to bury or whatever. And so I think someone just has to decide for themselves. But what I wanted people to understand was that there's a rich symbolism that Christians have brought to how we treat our dead, we put significance into it historically. And that is why we are a culture, the Christian tradition, who buries our dead, historically speaking. There is a reason for that. Now, you may choose to cremate, and I think that's fine. I don't think it's, like, sinful or anything like that. And I get it. There's, like, all sorts of other factors. Cost. So sometimes you live in a place where they don't bury because it's so cold all winter. You physically can't dig the ground. There's lots of things, right? Sometimes people are, you know, at sea, whatever. So there's lots of factors. And I don't think there's, like, a moral imperative. Like, you have to do this. I just wanted to point out the beauty or the richness of the symbol of why we historically have buried, and that there's kind of theological reasons. I mean, just personally, I would like to be buried when I die. I don't, you know, if it didn't work out that way, I'm not going to be concerned. I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be with Jesus. I don't, you know, in the end, it doesn't really matter in one sense. It's not like it's going to affect my eternity at all or anything like that. I just like the symbol, and I'm a guy who thinks highly of theology, so I like that idea. Who knows at that time, whether that's next week or in 60 years, whether that's even possible, burial, you know.
Like, most
people, most people still bury. It's the lower mainland where it's like 90% cremation or higher.
It's because there's no room.
Yeah, and right. The cost and all that sort of stuff. I know they have some issues like that in like places like England where they've been burying people for hundreds of years.
Right.
Like, they've been using the same graveyard for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so they're running out. They don't have room either. They stack them on top of each other sort of thing. So
So then, what was I going to say? I just totally blanked out a bit about burial. But anyway, so essentially you're trying to say we probably need not worry eternally whether we choose cremation or burial, but the symbol, if I understand you correct, of like the theology behind the rationale behind why people have been buried is more to do with a Christian tradition than anything else.
Yeah, and I think, okay, so if someone says, oh, just cremate me, it doesn't matter. Well, in one sense, it doesn't matter. Like, so sometimes people talk about that, right? Just cremate me, whatever. I don't really care. I'm going to be gone. Just in one sense, I agree. Like, on things like, I don't need a nice casket. Man, who cares? I'm dead, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you get funeral homes that are a little bit immoral, that are, like, playing off people's fears or worries. Doesn't grandma deserve me? That type of junk. But so in one sense, you go, oh, I don't, who really cares? It's, you know, just my body, whatever. In some ways, I go, that attitude is... I can kind of see what you're saying, but I don't think that's quite right in that if you have a good theology of resurrection, you're going to say, I'm not done with my body yet. Now, it's different. It's a changed body. It's a resurrected body. I just don't want us to be so sloppy in our thinking around death.
So then how would you... So where would... I remember what I wanted to ask you that stuck into my head when we were talking about burial and cremation was kind of the third avenue that Jesus was and his contemporaries would have happened. It didn't work for Jesus. He managed to make it out. But this idea of being entombed, is that any cultural significance? Do you know anything about it? You're looking at me blankly.
Well, yeah, he still is. The body is still there.
Right.
It still gets used. Like, the body's preserved.
Right. Oh, yeah, because they wrap it.
Yeah, it's not like they burning the body. Like, what movie was it? Robin Hood.
Right.
At the end of Robin Hood? Is it? I was watching some movie. It was medieval times, and they... Maybe help me. They, like, shoot the arrow. Braveheart? What is it? No, not Braveheart. I watched some movie recently. Was it Robin Hood? And they shoot the arrow and light the thing on fire. They put the body out on a funeral pyre and burn it.
Yeah, it sounds like Robin Hood, like Prince of Thieves style?
I can't remember. Anyway, I was watching some movie. It's medieval Christian era, like medieval times, so not like evangelical, but like Christian tradition. And they buried the dead. And I went, whoa, that's not accurate. Because ancient, like Greeks would bury the dead, or burn the dead. I said bury, right? Burn. Yeah. They'd burn the dead, and I said, that's not right, because Greeks would burn the dead, because the body was bad. They had sort of like this Gnostic view that the body's bad, and you try to escape the body. But Judeo-Christians don't burn, but bury, because they believe in resurrection. Anyway, it was a Hollywood movie. That wasn't the only thing we did.
At the very least, I think it's given us all something to think about, in the sense of considering, okay, it isn't the thing, but is a thing that we should consider, right? So we've talked about death, we've talked about resurrection, that when Jesus returns. What about all the dead right now? What about you and I? What happens to us or someone when they die? That we understand there will be resurrection, that they will come from the dead.
Yeah.
We're, like, so my grandfather, who knew Jesus...
Not resurrected.
Not resurrected, last I checked.
So what's...
So what's up with...
Yeah, and we didn't really talk about that. We left that out because I wanted to focus on resurrection. That's where heaven comes in, right? So heaven is... I mean, we talked about the physical resurrection, new life. But there is a spiritual heaven, the dwelling place of God... So to be away from the body is to be home with the Lord. So Christian dies, we put the body in the ground, or cremate, and the spirit, soul, goes to be the immaterial part, goes to be with God. So, you know, we would say, biblically, you have two parts to you, the material and the immaterial, the physical and spiritual. So your soul, whatever term you want to use, which I think are interchangeable for that immaterial, spiritual part, goes to be in the presence of God right now. In what we would call heaven, the dwelling place of God. It's where God is. And is there until the return of Christ. At the return of Christ, trumpet sounds, the dead are raised. So, in Christ...
Zombie now, apocalypse?
So, dead in Christ, right now, grandpa, whatever,
right,
is in the presence of God in heaven.
But away from the body.
Away from the bodies in the ground, it's a spiritual disembodied state. So that is still true. It's just not permanent. We don't go to heaven forever. Heaven is a temporary place until the return of Christ, when the dead are raised. The dead are raised, which means at that point, at the return of Christ, body and soul are reunited into resurrection bodies.
Right.
And then heaven, it's like heaven comes down, this is the end of Revelation. Heaven comes down, earth is remade, death is no more, we return to the garden, tree of life is there. It's the new Jerusalem, which is the, you know, resurrection life on the renewed heaven. That's the permanent state. So when someone dies, they go to heaven, but that's not forever. That spiritual disembodied heaven is the temporary holding place until the return of Christ and the resurrection when we're reunited, which is why we bury. That's that connection. Yeah. Is soul and body are separated until the return of Christ and will be reunited at the return of Christ.
So going back to my little quip and joke and tying into Halloween, do you think that ties into, like, I don't know if you've noticed in the last number of years, this obsession in our culture with zombies, right? Like, there's tons of zombie shows, yeah. Vampires, and this terminology, the undead.
Uh-huh.
And I've often wondered, like, where are the parallels? Is there this kind of, is it this cultural kind of irreligious desire to have eternity without Jesus?
I don't know. I wonder. I don't really know much about it. I know that Apologetics Canada is doing something on zombies. I saw Andy Steiger's doing something on, like, the zombie culture and tying it. I don't know what he's doing with it, but he was talking about zombie culture. I think they're doing an event on it.
Because, like, I've just seen it. I've just been kind of,
yeah, it's become a big
found fact. Myself thinking a bit about, like, how much of this is just a way of trying to have eternal life without Jesus, but part of it is the zombies are always, you know, like, just,
yeah,
like Frankenstein-y, brainless people. But
or is it an opportunity for, like, those movies is like bloodshed without the conscience of killing people, because the people have been taken over, bitten by a zombie. So it's like there's usually those movies and stuff are like senselessly violent, right?
Like Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet,
like Django Unchained or something.
No. So like horror.
There's a little bit of judgment in your voice there.
No.
You went to Fury. Give me a break, man.
I didn't check the rating. Right? It just looked cool. But yeah, I wonder if maybe that plays into it. Like, just you can do violent movies without going, wow, that was a lot of bloodshed. Well, they were just zombies.
Right. Well, one of the things.
It's,
yeah.
I'm a bit twisted.
Anyway. One of the things that came up on Sunday, too, is when my wife and I were driving home was this. You kind of paralleled or kind of touched on this parallel between people kind of approaching death, of having to face death, and it being for some, for the Christian, something that's relatively hope-filled.
Yeah.
And for the non-believer,
peace.
Yeah.
Peace. Have you ever like been able to visit someone or watch someone die?
I've done
their palliative care.
I've done some bedside stuff with people. The weirdest experience for me was as a pastor was having people kind of when I pray for them, asking that they would pray that they would die, kind of being like
in a lot of pain.
Yeah, they're just ready.
They come to a place. Yeah, like talk to people when they're just like, I am done.
Yeah, I remember I had a pastor emeritus in my last church that. That he just died. It's found out he just died a couple weeks ago. And he, when I met him, he was 91. So this is, I was 25. So he was 97 when he died. And all his friends were dead. All his contemporaries were dead. His children were dying. Like he talked about the kids coming, and his daughter was like 74, right? Like, or something. Like, they were just, they were seniors themselves. And so I was praying for him, and he just talked about wanting to die. But for me personally, one of the weirdest experiences was a former colleague and a very close friend of mine. I found out when we first started working together that he had a near-death experience in at Mount Baker when he was 19 or so, and got trapped in went off the trail, kind of classic, got caught in a ravine for like 8 hours, went into hypothermia. They finally dug him out, like a search and rescue team dug for like 4 hours to get to him. They pulled him out, ambulance, heart stopped like 8 times, kind of resuscitated with the like defibrillators. It was probably like clear. And when I heard this, I was kind of eager to have a conversation with him, because when I was in my early 20s, I was in Africa and I had a whitewater rafting accident, for lack of a better term, where I was tossed into the rapids and under the water for somewhere like close to 3 minutes. and I had this weird happening to me, for lack of a better term, was that I had been tossed and turned, and I was fighting to try and get to the surface, couldn't get to the surface, started swallowing water into my lungs. Like, yeah, if you've ever been underwater for a long time, that's one thing. Once your body, like, reacts naturally to, like, gasp for air, like, you can't hold your breath anymore,
yeah.
That is the most fearful, one of the scariest things that I've ever gone. Like, I wasn't trying to breathe. My body was just like, and it was just water. Awful. And at that point, I remember just being like, all right, I guess I'm going to die. And just being so okay with it. And just, like, I remember praying and just saying, like, all right, Lord, like, if you want me to, you want me to live, like, I need you to help me. I was weak and exhausted, couldn't do anything. And clearly he intervened, and I am here now and glad. But even as I look, if I would have thought about it in foresight back then, or look back on it in hindsight, I still cannot believe that I was so calm. Like, it seems to me that's something I should be much scared, more scared about. But I asked my friend Andrew, who had similar kind of near-death experience, did you have that? Did you have this, like, unbelievable peace? And he just said, like, no. It was the darkest, scariest, most hopeless experience of my life. It was just empty. Like, it was just this dark, empty void. And I was terrified the whole time. Like, unrest. And I was just like, I was taken aback when he said that. And I thought, that is strange. And he said, no, it's not. And I was like, what? He's a good pastor, so he taught me. And he said, I didn't know Jesus then. I didn't have the hope of Christ. You did when that happened to you. And so he's like, clearly we've just paralleled how we can face our final day when we have Jesus and when we don't. Mm-hmm. And it's and that has stuck with me to this day. It's obviously because I just told the story, but like as a pretty significant reminder of the hope that that we can have Jesus. Any last words from you? I guess I just kind of stole mic time here and told the
little kid. Thank you. Thanks for sure.
Well, Steve is off to a little 2-day trip to Cuba tomorrow. Just in town long enough to get a couple cigars and teach some Bible. kidding. But he's on a whirlwind teaching tour, so you can be praying for Steve this week as he travels, customs issues and just safety and energy, and it's going to be a busy week, and then back for the weekend for your adoption class. It's just like, you love to be busy, but you can be praying for Steve and Melissa and their families.
And you're preaching?
I'm preaching on mission. I was like excited because I've done no preparation and just read the passage and looked at the text, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is a great sermon where I can yell a lot at people. So I love yelling at people. I'm not going to yell at anyone. But it's got the potential to be abused that way.
Good sermon.
But, passage. We'll just talk about, like, is our eye on the prize when it comes to what our life is for, what our life is to be poured out and spent for. And I'm looking forward to getting into the text and seeing what happens. But other than that, we'll be back next Tuesday. Are you back? Yeah, you're back.
We'll be back next Monday.
Tuesday, next Monday.
Yes, I wouldn't miss a B-side.
Yeah, that's crazy. We'll be back next Monday and have been to Cuba in the in-between time. So be praying for Steve. Thanks for tuning in to B-side, and we hope you'll join us next week.